This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The March to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We got a lot of work to do, but you've got to get some work done during the break, and you got to be ready to win a game when we start up again.
Lindy Ruff on the Sabres and the break that is now upon them, 2 weeks essentially, while the rest of the hockey world, or a portion of it, focuses on the Four Nations. The Sabres, by the sounds of the coach, need to be focused on getting in a place where they can win the bulk, more than 75%, Marty, of the remaining 28 games to give themselves an opportunity here. Welcome in. Brand new week on Sabres Live. And how are you? You good?
I'm great. Just, I feel like the hockey world, and you just mentioned, a portion of the, covering
it's
body.
It's a portion, right? Like, it really is a portion. Yeah.
They are tweeting, and social media is buzzing today with Team Canada practice and the lines and the power play and who's on the ice first. And, man, look at this goalie's equipment and look at this other goalie's equipment. I know it. It doesn't start until Wednesday, but we are Monday, and that's what you do after a Super Bowl. You get right into hockey news right now. But for me personally, I'm looking at the next 2 weeks as I think it will be fun to watch the Four Nations face off. But I think back of when I played, like that All Star break, that Olympic break, that bye week was so important for me to just take a breath and just maybe focus on family for a little bit and then get back re-energized. So I think that's probably what most of the players, because there's only 92 players going to the tournament. The other 600 players or whatever, they're just, taking it easy for a couple of weeks.
Well, it's interesting that you phrased it that way. I think it certainly sounds like a logical approach from any player who is not involved in an event like this. But I dare say it's almost in contradiction to how Lindy Ruff just phrased what he wants from his team. And I've been reading, as many of the other team reports, and most of them speak with the tone of what you just said, like decompress, get healthy, feel better, feel ready, feel rested. But am I wrong? Like Lindy was there's, it was a tone. Granted, it was immediately after a loss that prevented them from hitting the break with a 5-game winning streak, which could have allowed them at least for 24 hours to feel like they gained on just about everybody in the race in the Eastern Conference. So in that sense, it's an even bigger miss than what one loss typically is. Yes. Like if we're going to keep measuring their distance to what their goal is, then Saturday was a huge miss based on loss of points, but also the opponent you were playing. My goodness, Nashville has not been good.
No, Nashville has not been good. You had just beaten them. They had lost 6 in a row. You had won 4 in a row. You're putting yourself in a position to, kind of get up in the game and say, hey, listen, we're going to take control of this game. We're going to put it away. Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen. And yeah, it was unfortunate that the Benson goal was called back because of an offside, but it was offside. Like, what it. Don't put yourself offside. And I think what Lindy Ruff's message was is taking a page from Herb Brooks. Remember in the movie Miracle when they go in Norway and they play and then Herb Brooks says, you didn't want to work during the game, you're going to work after the game, right? And he bag skates them in the building with the lights are shut off, whatever. I almost think like a lot of teams are saying, we've put ourselves in a position to be in a playoff spot. We've worked really hard all year. Let's take a couple of weeks to decompress because we have a lot of work coming up. And And Lindy's message is almost the other way. Like, hey, you did not put yourself in a position to earn a two-week vacation. You're putting yourself in a position to say, you better get in the gym and you better get on the ice. Yeah, I understand that, you know, you may go away, but, you know, John Tortorella was saying that to us too in New York the one year. He's like, when you guys are in Turks and Caicos in Cancun or Florida or whatever, every hotel has a gym. You better hit the gym, right? Like, that was Torts' message. And I think that's Lindy's message. Like, you better be ready to work when you come back. This is not, you've earned it. It's, hey, you're in a bad spot, and we need to make something happen as soon as you return. That was the message. Like, especially after that loss to Nashville, which Duffer, if they had won, maybe the message would have been different. Maybe it would have been, we've won five in a row. Remember what that's like. Take a little bit to breathe and then come back ready to work. But after that loss, I think it flipped the message. Like, no, we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. That's interesting in itself, because obviously the message would typically be consistent all the time, right? Or,
yes.
Or not. I'm asking you from a coaching standpoint that even if you have or feel like you're playing for a disciplinarian or an insert type of coach here, did they vary? Did they give you little outs at times, or was it like full throttle all the time? Message stays the exact same? Like, what's the reality here? What's the reality here, especially now in 2025?
Now, they did vary. They vary depending on the team, depending on the situation, also depending on the leadership inside the room. Oh, like, that is a big difference. Like, look, it didn't matter. I remember, like, if we had an all-star break or one year, Curtis Brown got married. We all went to his wedding. We enjoyed 3-4 days in California at Brownie's wedding and, you know, a bunch. But I can tell you this, James Patrick was in the gym working like he like needed to make gains. Everybody's different. But the message inside the room is also different. So, you know, Rasmus Dahlin is going to represent Sweden at the Four Nations. He's going to be high intensity, high level of competition. And maybe after he's done with Team Sweden, you know, you get like a few days off before returning. Maybe that's for him the time to just decompress. Like, Dahls has been playing and trying at a high, high level. Probably played one of his best games this year against Nashville in a loss. But still, I think for a guy like him, the message is probably different. You know, Lindy shakes his hand when he sees him in the plane after the game and says, hey, good luck. And when you're done with the tournament, make sure you take a few days and then be ready to come back and work hard. But the message is also different to other players that do not have that luxury of saying, well, I've been pretty good over the last 25 games. I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing. No, there's more that needs to be done.
Yeah.
I was a backup goalie. I went for vacation knowing I wasn't going to play probably 5 games after that. So that was okay.
Well, you're selling yourself a little short, I think. But I don't know. Like, there's an awful lot of directions to go here. It's even just mentioning Dahlin. Hang on, I got a beeping truck here.
It's okay. You know what? I mean, the recycling bin needs to be picked up at some point, Duffer. So that's what's happening. But no,
this
we did
like
ask.
Naked Gun. Only the camera is actually reversed. If I was turned around right now, it would have been a vehicle like going right into the shot. Oh, it's like the Georgia Dome
the Metro bus, the Atlanta bus.
The MARTA bus that got in front. This is literally what just happened.
Get out of the way. What are you doing?
Stupid bus.
That was, man. When we think about like stupid moments and all of it, that was definitely a stupid moment.
All right. So stupid moments in Sabres live broadcasting history. We're on the cusp of it right now. But when it comes to, like you mentioned, Dahlin, and obviously, it won't even take like an extraordinary. It's almost like the pace he's on, he could easily finish in top five in defense scoring. Not that that is any measure to then be able to say, oh, it must mean the Sabres had a great season because Dahlin ranked fifth among defensemen as opposed to ninth or 12th or 26th or whatever, right? But, like, can he and Byram be the, I don't know, let's try it. Let's call them, can they be the focal points coming out of this break? And if they are, how then can that make this team look different, feel different? How might it change the approach moving forward? Because obviously there's a lot of questions with Byram, his future, his next contract, yes, all of it. So let's maybe take it from this angle first, and whether we are true, even though they lost, I get it, you're not going to win every game. But we just saw another example of Dahlin and Byram, and can they kind of be a face, if you will, collectively for this team?
Well, when you look at the shot attempts against the Nashville Predators, like Bo Byram was on for 27 shot attempts at 5-on-5, Dahlin for 23, and they were only on for 14 shot attempts against, right? So they were 2-1. When they were on the ice, they were on 2-1. They've been that way for the last, you know, few games. And yes, there was a 4-game win streak. But the biggest thing for me now is the shift, right? Because what we saw at the start of the season, and the question we posed on X was basically, you know, what has been different from, you know, what will be different in 2 weeks. But I also viewed it as what has been different from the start of the season to now, right? And at the start of the season, Byram was playing with Owen Power in the first game. And now you've got Dahlin and Byram together. And is that what you're focused on? Do you think Dahlin and Byram can be that pair that you are going to rely upon as your top pair? And it could be for the next 5, 6 years, 7 years,
yeah, that's
right?
Yeah, that's what we're getting at here, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
like, what would even convince you at this point? Because at the end of the day, it's about wins, right? And because you're not there, now you're still managing, like, okay, we're not where we are yet, but can this be the duo that we trust in all situations, right? Like, this is a very, very, very critical time for roster development and projections.
Roster decisions.
Right? Decisions, yeah.
Yeah, roster decisions, because if you're looking at the next 2 weeks, you're probably going to meet at some point with your internal staff, and how do we go? Bo Byram needs a contract. He's an RFA. And when you return, you're going to have 2 weeks before the trade deadline. And if you don't think you're signing Bo Byram, there's no need to have Bo Byram on the roster for the last month of the season. And you're not going to, you know, I mean, we're still clinging on to, oh, there's a chance they make the playoffs if they win 3
That's
out of 4.
That's why this discussion is so,
but
so
reality,
important.
Reality is like, mm-hmm. You know what? The playoffs are not going to happen. The over-under right now for the Sabres point total at the end of the year is 78.5. Like, 78.5 is not going to get you anywhere near the 91, 92, 93 that it's going to take you. So, right. So make that decision, right? Like, but if you go with Dahlin and Byram as your top pair, where does that leave Owen Power? Because
I'm not worried about having a third defenseman of that, like, whatever you want to call it, salary, nature, style, whatever. Like, to me, then, which I think a lot of people have talked about for quite a while now, is what are the other three? What do the other three look like around those three?
Yeah, because next year, you won't have Yuki Aryu as a UFA. Well, you could have him, but, you know, he's a UFA. Bryson's a UFA. Gilbert's a UFA. Like, Samuelson, I mean, we cannot, I'm sorry to say that out loud, but it's like you almost have to put Samuelson in pencil in your roster, and you can't put it in pen because the amount of games that he's missed, and now he's out again, and you're looking at, okay, is that a figure that you're looking, he's going to play 90% of the games next season and would be part of your top four or whatnot? So I want to see now what the decision for the Sabres looking ahead to, is Bo Byram a part of it? I think that's the number one decision you have to make. Is Bo Byram a part of your future? Is there a way that they can get him signed? Or does Bo even want to be here long-term? Now that he's playing with Rasmus Dahlin and the numbers are there and he's playing 25, 26 minutes a game, like, are you going to get a better opportunity than that anywhere else? But is that opportunity...
Great question.
Better than saying, well, maybe I want to play for a different market, a different team, a different organization. I don't know. I don't know what his motives would be at the end of the day. But you have to have that answer. In 2 weeks, when you return from the break, you almost have to have that answer. What is going to be the situation with Bo Byram? Are we calling teams and trading him? Or is he going to be signed before the March 7th trade deadline? Because I think that's the deadline to make sure you have the right decision on Bo Byram. If you get to the summertime and Bo Byram wasn't traded and he's not signed, well, I mean,
he would still have trade value. I think no matter how
at the draft, yeah, but it's not even.
I mean, we do see, you know, late summer transactions where push comes to shove, contracts get in the way.
You can always take him to arbitration and say you're going to get a 1-year deal and we're going to punt it down the road because he's our RFA.
Sure.
But is that the best approach, right? So I think there's a decision to move with Byron.
Do you want to be put on the spot here?
Absolutely. Put me on the spot.
What would you do with Bo Byram?
The way that he's playing now and the partnership that I'm seeing with Rasmus Dahlin, I would sign him. I would give him that extension. I would sign him. Now I know the extension may be $7 million, and now you're already paying Dahlin 11, and you have Power at $8.3 million. So you're looking at paying $27 to $28 million to three defensemen, but the cap next year is $95.5 million. And the year after is going to be $104.5 million, and the year after $113 million. And the Sabres were not at the cap this year, so it's like you've got some flexibility to be able to make it fit. And I would say the way Bo Byram is playing right now and how he and Dahlin have been dominating in games, I would look to retain him.
Well, I applaud you for having a firm decision on that.
Wouldn't that answer the question, who is going to play with Rasmus Dahlin? It has been a question that we've asked. Like, it was Matthias Samuelsson, it was Will Borgen, it was Henry Jokiharju, it was Owen Power. That would answer your question.
That's true. I mean, if I was asking that question, I don't feel like I'm asking that question right now because it's 7 years in for Dahlin and maybe we're just used to seeing different partners. But
yes.
Am I wrong to suggest that maybe the name in the question has changed because people would rather now know who's playing with Owen Power?
Yeah, probably.
Now, and the disclaimer here is the question is always going to change. It doesn't matter which team. It doesn't matter forwards, D, goal. Like, it's constantly evolving. I get it.
Wouldn't that have been Connor Clifton, though? Wouldn't that be why you signed Connor Clifton? To play maybe with Owen Power, being a right-handed shot, to be like your fourth defenseman on the team? I mean, when they signed him at $3.3 million, a $3 to $3.5 million defenseman is not a third-pair defenseman.
Yes, he is. Absolutely. 100%
well, not at that
world.
Money. That money 100%. Is more like...
100%. Where was Matthias Samuelsson? He's obviously top four based on length and dollar. And that's way more than Clifton.
Yeah, but I've got him in pencil right now
Power?
Because I can't, like, I can't put him in pencil.
But the two things can be true.
Yes, okay.
So I don't think Clifton was ever brought in to be a top four, my opinion. And the beauty of that was if they were that comfortable. Now, granted, Byram has arrived after Clifton here.
Yes.
So this changed things, 100%. But I don't think the discussion needs to be on Clifton. In fact, I don't think anybody's having that discussion right now.
Mr. Clifton would have that discussion with us on the show, though. He's great. I can't wait to see him again.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I think we know what Clifton is, so we're not overly concerned about it. We're starting this defense conversation by still trying to project what Byram is, what his next contract would look like in terms of length and dollars, and whether you are just basically signing him to focus on a new top duo on this team long term, not just this year. So I don't know. I as you can tell, I am incapable of getting to the decision that you just got to sign him, make him party. Like, I don't know, because I'm not fielding calls on what his value is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is, based on where they are in the standings, I don't know if now is the time to be extending anyone on the roster.
Yeah, that internal deadline may be the reason why. But again, with Bo Byram, if people are like, oh, March 7, he's not signed and he's not traded, well, he doesn't have to be. He's an RFA. The Sabres can take him to arbitration, get him on a one-year deal. You're punting it down the road. Mm-hmm. I just feel for direction of the organization that you probably want to get that done, right? You probably are looking at either you trade and get value out of him, or you sign and you move on from that. A lot of things can happen. But that a lot of things maybe would happen also with a Jason Zucker, who's a UFA. That's a different thing. You don't have the ability to say, oh, we're going to punt it next year because we're going to still have a one-year deal with that player. Zucker's a UFA. Greenway's a UFA. You've got, you know, three defensemen that we just talked about, Jokiaru, Bryson, and Gilbert UFAs. Got Reimer UFA. And I think goalie is probably like you expect Levi to probably come up at some point next year, most likely. But you still have some big decisions. So that's why, you know, we ask on X, how is this roster going to look different in 2 weeks after the break? The big thing for me is Jordan Greenway. I think Greenway comes back. I think that afternoon, well, late afternoon, early evening game against the Rangers on Saturday the 22nd, you're going to see Jordan Greenway in the lineup. And now that makes, okay, where does that put Benson? Where does that put, you know, Krebs? Where does that put Quinn? Where does that put Cousins, who saw, we saw him on the wing and saw him at center? There's a lot of movement in the roster with Jordan Greenway returning, but it's the same pieces that you're moving around. We ask on X, so there's, you know, people are saying, what about Elias Pettersson? There's still conversation about Pettersson. Jason here says, hopefully Pettersson, Sam Benn, and Brendan Carlo are all added. Like, that's a dreamland. But that's what some people are saying. You need to add new bodies, new players to this roster moving forward.
And it's also part of why, I'm not saying it shapes my statement that I just made a couple of minutes ago about now not being the time necessarily for extensions. The fact is, general manager Kevin Adams has extended some of this current core in season. So it would be reasonable to assume that based on those past experiences and where they are at right now, that there would be pause on doing that again in season, right?
Yes, but I think the pause last
even
year
with Zucker, quite frankly,
was,
like, Zucker's a UFA, and he's been a very popular choice to say, oh, you know, you should get him for another year or two,
another
or
year
whatever.
Or two. Yes,
but
100%.
What 100%? What, that he's earned that, or
100% that I would like to have Jason Zucker be part of this group moving forward.
Right, but you have to marry that with where they are in the standings. And I'm not pinning any of that on Zucker. In fact, it's the opposite, because if you didn't have Zucker, you'd be wondering, oh my gosh, would the offense still be in the top 12 in the league?
Last year at this time, going into the trade deadline, I was like, okay, I get, like, Quinn was injured, down year for Cousins, a bit of a down year for Peterka until he got hot later in the year playing with Tuck and Thompson.
Well, he was, in his defense, he was warm before that. It wasn't.
He was warm, but yeah, but it was like the numbers were not what they were 2 years ago. I was like, okay, there's no rush to do anything now. It's a down year for everybody. There's next year. Next year is going to be different. The problem is that now we are a year later, and there is some players that are sitting here with, you know, Krebs has 4 goals, Quinn's has 9, Cousins has 11. You're looking at, you know, these are 3 guys that you would want at minimum 10 to 20 goals from all 3 of them, right? You would want Cousins to be near 20, Quinn to be near 20, and Krebs to probably
Marty,
be near 20.
Way over 20 for Cousins, obviously.
You can't
couch that one.
No, exactly. So being at 11, like Zucker's at 18. Like, I would love to have Zucker at 18 and Cousins at 20 right now. And so you got 38 between the 2 of them. but you're not there. So is what my approach last year was wait, you know, there's no rush to do anything right now in season. Now we're a year later and I'm like, oh, maybe there's a little bit more rush to do something in season, because the problem in the off season, you're always kind of optimistic of the next year. But now is where you could start to think about next year right here with these 2 weeks coming up.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let's hold a pause on that and continue
put
to work
a pin in it. We have a lot of airtime to fill in the next 2 weeks.
We do, but we also want to incorporate a lot of what you're taking from the audience and, you know, massage that into this larger discussion right now. And it has to be an incredibly large discussion based on where they're at, this 2 week window, the still to come trade deadline, and honestly, future projections for players on this roster. So we'll do that when we continue at Sabres Live on X, of course. And I mean, Sabres Live will be on site. They just won't be live from the road crew party, because that'll, of course, be much later on in the day. But I can't wait to be there to ramp up for the road crew party that comes up on March the 7th. And
trade deadline day, Duffer.
It is. I have a no trade, at least for this year only.
Yes.
Because I think I'm needed in attendance for this on March 7th.
You've been booked past the deadline. You're safe.
Tickets are $20. We have had such success with these events over the years, and it promises to be great again in Fort Lauderdale, just based on the long list of Sabres alumni who will be in attendance. Pierre Turgeon, Danny Gare, Don Edwards, just to name a few. And sabres.com/roadcrew. Again, tickets are just $20. Great time to get away. See a little hockey in the Sunshine State. Buffalo will be in Tampa the night before. Then they're in Lauderdale, or Sunrise, pardon me, the night after the Road Crew event. Sabres.com/Road Crew. We hope to see you there on March the 7th. More Sabres Live on this Monday edition after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
A lot of talk, Marty. A lot of talk. That's like, I get it. It's what the show is. But I feel like there's going to be even more of it over the next 2 weeks without games. It sounds weird. Maybe it's a different kind of talk. More speculative talk. Let's put it that way, right?
Yeah, it will be a lot of talk. And I mean, as we get to Wednesday and Thursday and next week, where there's games at the Four Nations, we may touch on that a little bit more. I'll be watching, and I don't know if our audience is going to be watching. Some may take a 2 week vacation. There's no football. Right. There's no hockey. It's like, I'm gonna, you know, watch Netflix and, you know, I'll binge watch some shows that I've missed on, but you know, we'll talk about it. So a lot of talk coming up absolutely for the next 2 weeks.
So based on the Byram specifically that we talked about before, like, what do you think is the likelihood of just a straight up trade? Like not unlike what Byram came in last year, which was, you know, for Casey Mittelstadt, but yeah. I don't know. This is again another obvious statement, and it would be typically true most seasons, based on, you know, 8 playoff spots available in each conference. But it does feel like there's a large group of teams in the same boat, and none of them are happy in the boat that they are in. So it doesn't mean fire sale. It doesn't mean rebuild. It may just mean like take St. Louis, for example. They're not going to plunge to the bottom here intentionally, but they're not happy with where they are, which is closer to 10 points out, you know, after making a coaching change already. And you documented all of this last week really well with, you know, the future of Armstrong and the incoming nature of Steen and all that. But like, so I guess what I'm getting at, and part of this is tweaked by the fact that Tampa hit the break hot. They win 4 in a row. They look very much like they've been in the past. Vasilevsky looks really good. But kind of my go-to guy in all this is often Brandon Hagel, right? So Hagel's going to suit up for Team Canada. He had 8 points in his last four games before the break. He's going to have another career year. That'll be three straight, depending on your curriculum for career year, whether it's goals or points, but pick one. And so the point is exactly 3 years ago, almost, Hagel was traded before he was even broaching really, really, really good player status. He was a good player. Wasn't really, really, really good. He was traded to Tampa for a deal that included two prospects that haven't really panned out and two first-round picks.
Yes.
In the time since, in the 3 years, Brandon Hagel is top 50, and this is, he's better than 50. He's easily in the top 50 in points by any NHL player. He's also easily in the top 50 in goals. Think about that. There's 32 teams in the NHL. So he's basically in the top 1.5 players for each team if it was divided evenly.
Yeah,
In what world would you not make that trade over and over? And we...
Acquiring a top 1.5, top 2 player on your team for a couple of prospects.
For two first-rounders, which are so far down the road.
Who cares? Exactly.
Who cares?
Like you're acquiring but even a top
if,
2
but
player.
But even if you do care to measure it 12 years from now, it doesn't matter because what you acquired was something that was impactful not only on your team, but within the entire scope of top scoring in the NHL. So this is all I'm saying is deals like this are there. And I'm fascinated by it because Hagel's going to be potentially a huge talking point in this tournament.
Yes.
Based on how hot he's been, but more importantly, the fact that he even made this team, right?
Hagel was coming from Chicago. Chicago were on their downswing, and then he goes to Tampa. It was a winning organization, and he takes off, right? He's with the Stamkos and the Kucherov and the Hedman and the Point and Sorelli and at the time Killorn and Palat and whatever. And it's like, whoop, like everything rise, right? And, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. Like he was on a team that was really good. Some would say that's the same thing happened to a lot of the Sabres players that were moved on. Sam Reinhart and Brendan Montour. And we all knew they were really good players. They ended up going somewhere else and they became elite. On winning teams. The Sabres, if they were a winning team right now, I would say, oh, I'd love for them to take a chance on player X and player Y and player Z because I can see some really good things, but bring them in our environment and it will be different. The environment right now is not that. The environment is a little bit more complicated than saying you're coming on a winning team and all of a sudden we're going to help you get to your potential. But I do believe that there's trades out there that you can make. Like, I feel like last year's Byram trade for Casey Milstead was a good trade for the Sabres. And it could be a very, very good trade if we continue to see Bo Byram play the way that he's playing and if he becomes part long-term with the Sabres. Or if it's not long-term, then you maybe acquire something that will be an answer for long term. Like we have Jake here who says, you know what, Greenway will help, but if they do make a trade, do not include Byram. We need more of what he brings, not less, even if it's for Elias Pettersson. So
Elias is not being traded. Anybody,
no, but if that's,
anybody
that type
who
of player,
that,
right?
Like
Jake is saying, I don't want to include Byram for that type of player because I feel like we need Byram more. There's other players you can trade to achieve that.
Right.
But my counter argument to this is, okay, well, where do the Sabres sit in goals against right now per game in the National? 28. Where do they sit?
30th in save percentage.
Where do they sit in expected goals against? 25th. It's not like defensively they've been lighting it out. And last game, in the post game, I believe, Duffer, I told you against Nashville, I said, I like what I saw from the Sabres in that game. And from the last few games with their offensive identity, something that I feel like got lost. And maybe it's coming back a little bit, right? Dallin, offensive identity. Thompson, offensive identity. Kulik, you know, Peterka. Now, that line had a tough game against Nashville. Even Lindyrov said our top line had a tough game. I get that. Mm-hmm. But the offensive identity, so now I'm looking back at it as, okay, is this the way you got to build your team and get that offensive identity and get guys that are going to perform offensively, regardless of if you give up 3 or 3.5 per game and you're 28 and goes against again per game, you're going to score 4 game and you're going to win more games. They're like, not, is though. That where you got to go?
Right? You're asking this, but you're not believing. The only you brought up their goals against and where they rank is because you know that they have to be better defensively.
They have to be better defensively.
And, it's that simple. I don't want to be that guy. I want to be what you just said. I want to score 4.5 a game and not care about my own end. But I felt the tone and the familiarity with which some of the players spoke after the game against Nashville. I was like, oh, man, like this. This hasn't been tweaked the way they need it to be tweaked. You can't just win 4 in a row and then go right back to the same things that were a huge part of the 13-game losing streak.
Yeah, no.
Right?
Yeah, giving up. Like, that in those 4 games in a row, they won 2 games. They won by giving 3 goals or, 3 goals in a game, which had only happened 3 times in the previous 50-some games this year.
Right.
So they found a little offensive identity, but they didn't give up 5 or 6.
Exactly.
They gave up 3. They gave up 2. They gave up 3. Like, so, but goaltending is a part of that. Goaltending is a part of that. You mentioned save percentage. I'm telling you that expected goals against, you're pretty low as well, meaning you're still giving up a lot of chances.
So it's not goaltending then? Because that is more of a team stat, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's both. I think that you're giving up too much. And obviously, if your save percentage as a team is 30th, now there's empty net goals that factor in as a team save percentage, but it still has to be better than that.
So what do you do then? Because this is amazing how it can be so unscripted, but just the name Bo Byram has now been woven through this entire show. And when I said, I'm not sure I'm in a comfortable spot to be signing extensions or whatever, it's because you have to view it all together. And whatever we love about Bo, and again, this doesn't put any of it on him for the save percentage and the goals against average, but you have to consider all of it. Why are they not better as a team right now, right? So by signing another more offensive-minded defenseman, are you still going to be able to fix your shortcomings, right? So I don't know. I'm fascinated by this.
All right, well, I'll give you, if people want to know why we mentioned team save percentage and what does it matter, right? Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, do you win games or whatnot? Philadelphia is 32nd, Montreal is 31st, Buffalo is 30th, San Jose is 29th, Pittsburgh is 27th, Nashville is 26th, Columbus is 25th. They've been outscoring their problems to a certain extent.
Yes.
But the only two teams in the bottom 10 teams, the only two teams that really can make a point for outscoring their problems are Colorado and Columbus.
Right.
But Colorado, since Mackenzie Blackwood and Scott Wedgwood are there, the save percentage is very respectable. It was atrocious with Georgiev there earlier in the year. So in the bottom 10 teams, there's one team, Columbus, that you can say they're outscoring their goaltending deficiencies to a certain extent.
Or their defensive. They've lost 4 in a row. Out of the wild card just by a blip and clearly hurting.
They're also dealing with injuries.
That's the problem, is Don Waddell wants to add a top 6 scorer right now because he knows that as much as he loves, and rightfully so, Kent Johnson and Adam Fantilli, like the loss of Monahan became more pronounced when Marchenko went down and the domino effect is going to be, and look, they stubbed their toe hard in that last game against the Rangers. They had 2 leads. They didn't hold it, and it stinks because one game changes how they feel for 2 weeks, because they would have been sitting here in a wild card right, for the next 2 weeks while Four Nations is on, and people would, you know. But now it's four losses in a row, and you're like, I don't know if Columbus is going to be able to you know, steady things here based on the severity of their injuries. But I don't know. So with Byram, with the attention to, if you're going to put the attention on the defensive side of it right now.
Yep.
Well, let me, okay. Do you think actually that's going to be where the attention is placed between now and March 7th?
No. And that's what, no? Like, as you were asking the questions, I say, okay, well, yeah, maybe Byram is a priority, but I don't feel like the main focus is going to be on the group of defense. I think there is a way.
If they make a big trade, is it not for someone in top four defense?
No.
No?
I think if they make a big trade, is for a top six forward.
Hmm.
Because you have a hole, and right now you're playing with a 20-year-old Yuri Kulik as your first-line center, mm-hmm. and you're playing right now with Ryan McLeod as your second-line center. McLeod is better suited as a, you know, third-line center. You have a big hole at that position. I think if you make a big trade, is to add somebody to be able to play with maybe Zucker and Tuck, or maybe you say, hey, we're going to have Quinn and Tuck with that person and really have an offensive flair in your top six. I think it's more that. So our focus right now has been on, well, Byram and the defense and Dahlin and the goals against and all of that. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say this maybe is going to contradict everything in the sense that if they make a big trade, it's going to help the group of forward. Because I think that's where the problem is. Last game against Nashville, everybody's talking about Alex Tuck turnover, Tage Thompson turnover, all of a sudden you give up two goals, right? Mm-hmm. That's where the big issue has been. Was there a problem earlier in the year in defending around your net and being tough around your net? Yes. I don't think that has been the case now. I think the case has been puck management, and puck management from the forwards has been the number one thing. That's where it is going to be addressed.
As we were discussing, I'm thinking, man, people are watching and listening thinking, well, obviously they're not going to be acquiring a top four defenseman if they trade Byram, right? But I wasn't looking at it from trading Byram. I was looking at it from trading one of their, you know,
UFAs.
Like a forward. Oh. I mean, if they traded Dylan, for instance, right? What would be your goal to get back in return?
I think that one of the rumors of a month, maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago, was Dylan Cousins going to Vancouver for Elias Pettersson. And I'm thinking, if you're trading Dylan Cousins, you're acquiring a top six forward.
Yeah, but that was Cousins and Byram. It's a lot different than just trading Cousins without trading Byram.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have been Cousins and Byram straight up for Pettersson. It would have been maybe with something else.
But you would still
have
been taking parts off of both the forward and the defense. But take a quick break. We are, if nothing else, walking contradictions. Welcome to the brand new week on Sabres Live.
Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Black History Celebration this month, specifically from a Sabre standpoint, on February 25th when they're home against the Ducks. That's an Anaheim team that's won six of their last seven. Black History Celebration, we're uniting our community, its people, celebrating Black excellence throughout the Sabrehood and far beyond. And you can join us on that night, sabres.com/tickets. Again, it's Buffalo Anaheim on February the 25th. Marty, best and worst of the weekend. Wind down Sabres Live on a Monday.
Okay, well, best, I'm going to go a little personal on that one because the East Aurora High School had their musical this weekend, a great musical. My daughter was part of it. It was the Addams Family. So I went to see it Friday night, and they had a show Saturday and Sunday. It was awesome. So congratulations to all that took place. The costume, the set, the music, everything was fantastic. So it was awesome. So that's the best for me. The worst, Look, I'm going to go with the Super Bowl, not because I was happy that the Eagles won. And, you know, some are saying Tom Brady, this, look, it was a blowout. It's hard to be the analyst in a blowout and keep the energy up, right? I hated the bug. The score bug on Fox was absolutely awful. It was bad. I didn't love, you know, the sideline interviews. I didn't like, there's a lot I didn't like about it. I loved the results. So that was good. I did like David Beckham and Matt Damon's commercial. That was good.
All right. I'm going to continue working on the best for an extended weekend here over the next 2 weeks. We'll see you tomorrow.